Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone. An experience I can unfortunately speak personally to, but I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Hello and welcome to NVC, IGN's Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and this week we will be talking about Paper Mario, The Origami King, the best games to play in the summer, and a whole lot more Nintendo stuff. This week I am joined by Zach Ryan.
Hey, everybody.
Tom Marks.
Hello.
And Seth Macy.
Hello.
Hey, guys. How's everyone doing? How was your 4th of July?
It was good. I didn't eat any hot dogs, which was disappointing, but
I didn't either. Yeah.
I heard a lot of fireworks.
I did too. I also heard fireworks at 3 o'clock in the morning last night. I was super happy about that.
I'm feeling extra festive.
Extra festive. But my goal on 4th of July was to get a sunburn, and I am sad to report I did not get one. Despite my best efforts. But anyway,
you know how much priorities have shifted when that's the goal.
it's not 4th of July unless you tend to accidentally spend too much time in the sun and get sunburnt. But because there are no festivities, I didn't have a lot of, reason to stay outside of the sun. So I got bored and inside before I reached my goal. I hope everyone else's 4th of July was more exciting than mine.
It was good.
Yeah, good. And speaking of the summer, 4th of July kind of like kicks off summer for me. It's hot in some places, kind of not here. It's 70 hot. I don't know. It's up to you. But let's talk about the best games on the Switch that remind you of summer. I'm looking for games with summer vibes, and then we can also talk about some games that remind you of one of your past stereotypical summers. Guys, what are your favorite games that give off summer vibes? I think Tom is frozen.
No, I'm not frozen. Back. I'm frozen in thought.
He's just
frozen in thought. I'm very unsummer-like, Tom.
The one that sprang to mind immediately that you've already got on this on a little list you put together is Super Mario Sunshine, right? Like that game is just like, I mean, it's in the summer vibes of the sun are in the name essentially, but also just like, man, the way they crafted Isle Delfino and like Delfino Plaza and all of the really lovely little beachy environments in that game is there's not much better that captures that feeling in a game, especially in that area, like the little like market area, which has like all the fruit stalls and like, I just love the vibe of that game so much.
That was the first game that popped into my mind when I was thinking about it. I was like, what game reminds me of summer? And it was definitely Super Mario Sunshine. Oh, Seth, what do you think?
Oh, obviously it's Wave Race 64. Yeah, at the end of the day.
Okay.
You're jumping your jet ski over waves and ramps and things of that nature. It's a cool and refreshing way to spend a hot summer's day out on the water. Who could complain? Nobody. Yeah. That's who.
I miss beach visits, I gotta say. What about you, Zach?
I mean, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker at this juncture. possibly the most summertimey game you could play out on the open sea. Get out there and do a nice sail. Love that game.
Trying to think of some more. And I mean, we have to mention the Animal Crossing New Horizons recent summer update. Have any of you guys been played that?
I have not dipped back into it yet, sadly.
Yeah.
I've dropped off Animal Crossing very hard.
But I was very happy to see it. Happy to see it.
And we had actually... on the Wiki Steam, we had actually just deleted some of our like swimming and diving pages, like, oh, like this isn't included. And then it immediately came back with this update. But it's fine. Like you can just undo it. So it's okay. But
that's good.
For those of you who don't know, there's a new summer update in Animal Crossing that lets you swim and collect stuff like sea stars and seashells and scallops and all of that, the good kind of summer delicious stuff that you do. I don't know, like scallop. I don't know what to call it. Hunting? Scallop hunting? You would have called it fishing. Scallops gathering.
Chucking.
Well, you shucking. Shuck.
Well, you can either dive for them or you can drag for them. So there's two different ways to do
diving.
It
in diving real life. Diving for scallops in real life is extremely fun and I highly recommend it. Shucking them is very difficult. I don't recommend that. But you can kind of do that in Animal Crossing now and have some. What are you making those looks for, Zach?
This is a weird show.
I'm sorry. Guys, we got to talk about scallop shucking.
I got all excited. We're like, oh, we're talking about commercial fishing. This is where I get to shine.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of all the weird summer stuff I do in Florida that involves the beach and sea creatures.
Fair enough.
Come on. Animal Crossing is a great place to do that. You can hang out with your friends and go and pick up sea stars off the floor of the ocean without actually disrupting animals' lives. It's a great replacement for summer stuff.
Yeah.
And then I also wanted to mention Summer in Mara because it has summer in the title and it also just came out.
What is that game? I don't know what that game is, Summer in Mara.
So how do I actually haven't played it, so I can't give you a good personal rundown. From what it seems, you play on an island and it's an adventure game, relaxing, indie. It looks cute.
Yeah, it's got the same sort of vibes as like Stardew Valley, Harvest Moony sort of stuff. Not specifically the same type of gameplay, but you know that sort of feeling.
Okay, cool. That sounds good.
So those are, I guess, the only games we could really think of that give good summer vibes.
So here's the question I have.
Yeah.
Is Mario and Sonic Summer Olympics too on the
note?
Oh, there
we go. No, it has summer in the title.
Is that like too direct? I don't know.
Somebody's got to hold the Olympics, Tom. I mean... In 2020, if Tokyo can't do it, Mario and Sonic are going to step in and do it for you.
There you go.
Makes sense.
Got it. I got the game. I was also thinking of some non-Nintendo games that have summer vibes, but some of you guys might scoff at me to mention this, but Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball. Great summer game. You just hang it out.
I always forget that that's like one of your go-tos, Casey.
I really like that game. I mean, you're just hanging with your gal pals. doing beach volleyball and pool games and stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, I'd want to go on that vacation. Who wouldn't? But that's just me. It's fine. I have... Whatever. All right.
No, this is a judgment-free zone. No one here is judging you.
Yeah. It's got I'm judging a little bit. I know
Zach's judging a little bit.
It's got tons of collectibles. It makes sense. It tracks.
You can also ride a jet ski. I mean,
see,
I know.
Now I didn't know this.
Yeah, you ride a jet ski. Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball.
Also, let's not forget about the butts.
Yeah, there's also butts in that game. And there's secrets that I won't mention on this show, but I'm sure you can easily look it up, and it regards on what age you set your character to.
Secret
in the options.
Butts.
Secret. Secret.
Secret
stuff.
For all you naughty volleyball fans out there.
I did have another question for you guys. So those
now
are
who's making
have...
a face, Tom?
Yeah. So those are games that give off some summer vibes, but I wanted to ask the panel, what game reminds you of your most stereotypical summer? Like, when you think of summer, like, what game comes to your mind? Seth, I know that you had an answer.
Let's take it back to the summer of 1999. A young airman first class, Seth Macy, had just returned from a four-month deployment to Tirana, Albania. He had a lot of money in his bank account because he had been prohibited from spending his money due to the fact that he was living on a camp in Tirana, Albania. So the first thing he did was he bought a JVC 27-inch CRT television set, a Nintendo 64, and a copy of Ocarina of Time. And I had 2 weeks off, and I sat in my dorm room, and I played Ocarina of Time basically the entire time because everyone else still had to go to work. I will always associate that game with summer. Because of just like that was in July of 98. And I will also, at the same time, they had a 4th of July festival on base called the Freedom Fest, which was set up with carnival rides. And this was just as Lou Bega was breaking into the music scene with a little ditty called Mambo Number 5, which they played on the merry-go-round over and over. So I also think of Ocarina of Time and Mambo Number 5 basically as the same thing because I could hear Mambo Number 5 going on constantly while I was playing through Ocarina of Time.
That's a weird association, Mambo Number 5 with Ocarina of Time.
If you hear it 700 times in the course of 2 weeks while you're playing Ocarina of Time, you will always get a little bit of Monica in
water temple.
Yeah. Why do you hate Lou Bega? The guy brought all of Europe together.
It's not that I hate Lou Bega. It's just that that is one of those songs that as soon as it gets in your head, it's there to stay. Like there's just no getting around it.
Is.
Yeah. I apologize to everyone who's now cursed with this affliction.
Why? Yeah, okay. I'm with Zach now. It's stuck in my head. You're totally right.
Yeah, I know. I don't make
it's
the
a
rules.
Good song. Come on.
It's still a good. It's still a good
catchy
song.
Little song. It took the world by storm.
All right, Tom. what game reminds you of your most
Mama number five?
Oh. Did you say me?
Yes.
Well, that story is great. Like, that is genuinely a wonderful story. For me, probably the easiest answer is Smash Bros. Right? Like,
okay.
That was the game me and my friends just like would play constantly. Right? And like the thing we do a lot when I was younger too, for like whenever we had the time or the people available, which was usually summer, was like we would have. In one room, everyone playing or four people at a time playing Smash Bros. But we'd have like five or six people over or like hanging out or whatever. So in the other room on the computer, we'd have Heroes of Might and Magic, usually two or three, right? Like one of the early Heroes of Might and Magic games on hot seat, which means that you couldn't be in the room while someone else was taking their turn because everyone was playing against each other and just sharing a computer. So we'd have the hot seat going. And if we had five people, we'd have four people playing Smash Bros. And then whoever's turn it was in Might and Magic would be in the other room taking their turn. And then they'd come out and just swap controllers with whoever's next turn it was. They'd go into the next room, play Heroes, and like we'd keep playing Smash Bros. In that room.
This
so that
like
was
a
like
a super fun summer.
No, it's great. And we did that a fair amount. So Smash Bros. Is always a good vibe to me, but also just like the other sort of later in my life place that summer gaming takes me is like League of Legends, which is not on Switch, but any sort of game that is like one of those things that just requires investment right? Yeah. Like MOBAs or something like Warframe or like any, which is on Switch, any of those sorts of games that just take brain power and take you learning like a Rolodex full of abilities and items and strategies. I always think those games remind me of just like, this is going to sound depressing, but I don't mean it that way, but like having the time to actually invest in them. You know what I mean? It's like, man, I do not have time for a MOBA right now.
Zach, what about you?
The first game that comes to mind is Banjo-Kazooie. I don't know specifically why that is the game that popped into my head, but I do feel like I played that game a lot one specific summer. So I would say that's probably at the top of my list for summertime games.
Cool. For me, my real answer is Monster Hunter, but that was Nintendo at the time. So my other answer is Mario Party 2. Because when I was about, I must have been 10 and my neighbor was 12. And every day I would carry over my Nintendo 64 to her house and we would play Mario Party 2 every day for like 2 months. And I got very, very good at Mario Party. And to this very day, I'm still quite good at mini games, I think. I'd say so myself. It was a very fun summer.
Was 2 the one that destroyed people's joysticks, or was that 1?
I believe that was
all
the
of
first
them?
One.
No.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I think it was the very first one where they sent out those weird gloves.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we just talked about some games that give us summer vibes and games that make us nostalgic for summer. Now let's move on to our next topic, Paper Mario the Origami King. Zach has played a ton of it, and if you're watching this on Thursday, his preview, our final preview on IGN, just released for it. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, that sure is a Paper Mario game. you know, I think that, well, okay, so here's the thing. I like what I've played. I've played about 9 hours. I'd say I'm probably about one third of the way through the game if I had to guess. So I like what I've played, but I also like Paper Mario games, right? Like, I don't necessarily feel like this one breaks the mold. And I say this in my review, but I think the interesting thing or the thing to consider about this game compared to some of Nintendo's other offerings on the Switch is like, I feel like Nintendo has done a really good job of either redefining or sort of offering up the best version of an established franchise, right? Like Luigi's Mansion 3 doesn't stray too far from the two previous Luigi's Mansions before it, but it is a much better paced and a much better like actioned game, right? Breath of the Wild, obviously a completely new take on Zelda. Super Mario Odyssey, like, probably the best 3D Mario that we've had ever, right? This game is good, but it is a Paper Mario game through and through. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I think that to a lot of people, that's a really good thing. It's fun. It's, you know, very like my first RPG when it comes to the RPG mechanics of the game. You know, you're doing things like equipping accessories and looking for hearts for additional, you know, HP increases and things like that. But I think, as is the case with any Paper Mario game, where it really shines is the humor and the writing. It's so funny right out of the bat. Like, I was like chuckling at it constantly, but there is a couple of parts. There's specifically one joke with a toad that made me laugh so hard that I had to like set the controller down. Like, it's a very, very funny and very well localized game for sure. And it's also like gorgeous to look at. Some of the areas that you go to, you know, there's a Shogun Studios is like a Japanese themed television studio space where there's all these like different areas to interact with. And, you know, like, it's very, it looks like a Japanese temple and a little town outside of it. That's very cool. There's Autumn Hills, which is also like similarly themed, but has like all these like, you know, red and gold and orange leaves everywhere and stuff. And it's just like, there are some places to that playing through the game, some locations where you stop and you're like, wow, this is a really great looking game, in the same way that like, Yoshi's Crafted World is like really interesting to look at because it's all very handcrafted and very unique in the way that like you can see the seams in the paper where it's been folded or the cardboard that makes up the coins and stuff like that. Like it's very, very clever and very cute.
Yeah, Nintendo does a really good job with their first parties of like, and this is going to sound harsh, but like hiding the shortcomings of what the Switch can do graphically, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you just went out to try to make a beautiful looking AAA high-end graphics game, like let's say porting The Witcher to Switch, like you're obviously going to see what the Switch can't do in a game mm-hmm. like that. But in, like you said, in Crafted World, in Odyssey, in Breath of the Wild, apparently in Origami King, right? That is something that Nintendo is so good at, is coming up with a style that doesn't make you even notice those rough edges because right. you're looking at other things, right? You're impressed by other things.
Yeah, like they're never going to do something photorealistic, but this is right. this is equally visually appealing in a totally different way. You know, and it's really clever in that, like, in the same way that Luigi's Mansion is, that there's tons of hidden interactivity all over the place. Like there are so many different things that you can look at or take a closer inspection of, or, you know, hit with your hammer and they'll react or something like that. And it's, you know, it's really fun. Like all of the characters are made of paper, whether they're folded into origami or whether they're the like traditional 2D paper characters from Paper Mario. And like, you can whack any of them with your hammer and they all will give you a different response and result. And like, you know, it's oftentimes they'll comment on it. It's really funny. There's like stuff hidden everywhere, including toads. You know, toads come and help you in battle. Like you can summon toads and they'll give you health and they'll attack the enemies and like change the layouts of the environments and stuff during the battles itself. But like the way to increase that stat essentially for those battles is to find toads hidden throughout the world. And there's toads hidden everywhere. Like there's just toads all over the damn place. It's wild. Like you find them hidden in all kinds of things, folded up into different objects. Like, so it encourages you to go around and just be like hammering on everything to try and see where toads are going to pop out, which I really loved. The battle system is really unique. I'm sorry. You have to talk amongst yourselves for 1 second while I plug in my computer. I didn't realize it was going to die.
Okay. When he comes back, I did want to ask, like, is it a Korok seed situation with the toads?
Right.
So we'll get that answer when he comes back.
Well, it's funny too, because that's also a thing they did in the Pokemon DLC recently, right? Mm-hmm. They did with the Diglets thing, the mm-hmm. Alolan Diglets that you can find all around. So maybe Nintendo is doing more of that. They're doing these like hide little dudes everywhere because it works so well in Breath of the Wild.
But did it though? I mean, did you actually enjoy finding over 900 Korok seeds? Korok seed situation.
I found 180 of them and I was totally pleased and had absolutely no desire to go find.
That's a really interesting comparison because like I feel the same way about the toads as I did feel about the Koroks in Breath of the Wild, and that like if I find one by happenstance, like if I just happen to find one, great. But if I miss one or two, you know, like it's not that big a deal. I got an item later in the game in Paper Mario that like it's a little bell that will ding when you're close to a toad, and that bell is like constantly going off, and I'm just like, well, if it's not just readily apparent where he is, I'm not going to go look for them. Like it's fine, I already have enough of these guys. I should talk about
off?
yeah it's an accessory, so you can equip it or take it off, like the battle system is really interesting this time around. It's like a really neat mix of like a quick puzzle solving and actual like Paper Mario battles. So like all the battles take place on this giant circle, this segmented circle. And so your first task in any battle, like your enemies come in and they scatter all over the circle. And it's your job to rotate each concentric circle or move them vertically across the circle to line them up, right? Like either in groups of four or in straight lines. And if they're in straight lines, then you can jump across them. And if they're in groups of four, you can use your hammer and attack them. And so sometimes you'll have like, you know, 12 enemies on screen and you'll have to figure out in two or three moves how to get them all clustered together in a specific way. So it's really tricky, especially the later you get into the game, you know, they'll scatter those enemies. And sometimes the solution is really readily apparent. Like it's like, oh, it's just these two moves, no big deal. And then sometimes it's like, oh, I'm not entirely sure and I'll have to attack separate groups at different times. So that's really interesting. But then the best part about the game, hands down, is the boss battles. The boss battles are a little different. They're kind of backwards to how the regular battles play out, in that all the regular battles, Mario's in the middle and all the enemies are around him, and you have to line them up on the outside. But for boss battles, the bosses are in the middle and Mario starts on the outside, and it's your job to rotate the circles to create a path for Mario to get to the boss in the middle and then attack. And so, like, the first boss is really clever. It's this giant turtle boss. And so you have to move Mario in a way, lay out these arrows on the play field, kind of like in Choo Choo Rocket. Like, you have to lay out these areas to guide guide Mario to the turtle's hind legs or the turtle's tail or the turtle's head, and do specific attacks at these different points. And it makes those boss battles like really frantic and really fun. I kind of came away from it wishing that more of the battles were like the boss battles and less of the regular battles, because the boss battles are just so much more engaging and require so much more planning and thought. But the battle system is neat. I liked that a lot. The music is killer. God, the music absolutely slaps. Especially like there's two types of battles, regular battles. There's just like a standard battle and then a wave battle where you'll fight multiple waves of enemies. And the wave battle theme is like this insane, like Japanese metal riff with like all these like funny little Mario voices going off. And like, it's really, really, and it happens at the very beginning of the game. It's very cool. But yeah, I like it. I think it's good. I'm excited to play more of it. I think that the characters and the writing are really funny. And if you're a Paper Mario fan, I feel like this is going to be right up your alley. But if you're looking for a kind of a reimagining of that genre, or like a return to like the Thousand Year Door era Paper Mario, I think you might be left a little wanting, but cool game. I'm having a good time with it.
Awesome. Zach, thank you so much for that awesome summary and preview of Paper Mario the Origami King. That game comes out on July 17th for the Nintendo Switch, and I'm sure we will be talking about it a lot more once everyone else has played it.
Yeah.
Now, let's move on to some more news. Seth, you brought up this game to me. I was unaware. There's this game called Panzer Paladin coming out on the Nintendo Switch on July 21st, and it's made by Tribute Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more.
Well, it looks awesome. I played this game at PAX East 2018, and it was very early. And even then, I said, wow, this game is extremely my jam. It's pixel art. It's like NES style. I think, don't quote me on this, don't put me on the box, but I think this has the potential to be like another Shovel Knight, just because of the charm of it and how many sort of old NES games sort of smashes together. Like Tom and I were speaking earlier about it. It looks like Mega Man X boss battles meets like Blaster Master meets, I can't even remember the name of the game now. It's from Irem, Metal Storm, where it has like gravity switching. There you can like make your own swords in this like pixel art editor, and then you know you can go swinging around your own custom swords. I'm sure that will not be abused horribly.
Seth was so excited this morning when he sent this new trailer to me for Panzer Paladin. Yeah. And like, it looks really cool. The thing that struck me that I said to you also was like, it looks kind of like somebody took those sequences in Mega Man X where you can jump, you can steal a mech from an enemy and jump in the mech, and like just made a whole game out of that mechanic, but way expanded. Like, so yeah, I agree. It looks neat.
Yeah. Cool. It's a mech game, but it's also an old school platformer, and it just looks gorgeous. Like you should absolutely look at this game, like at the gameplay trailer of it. And from what I played 2.5 years ago in Boston, it was very fun back then. And it was like a surprise that it's even coming out. It was just like today they announced it. Hey, July 21st, you're going to get this cool game for your Switch. Enjoy yourselves, folks. Here's a gift from We Tribute Studios to you, the fans of mech action.
Thank you. Thank you for the heads up on this cool game that we get to look forward to.
I'm very excited.
As well,
the fans of mech.
Speaking of things to look forward to, July Nintendo Switch Online games have been announced, and one of them is Donkey Kong Country. Did I just say Kong? Donkey Kong. There's no con going on with this. This is true.
God.
It's all true. Guys, Donkey Kong Country, I love that game. I played it all the time on Nintendo. Yeah. So I am stoked for this to come to the Nintendo Switch. I remember being so impressed about these graphics when I was a little kid. Right?
You know who hates this game? Shigeru Miyamoto.
Really?
Yeah, he's like, Americans will just look at some nice graphics and that's all it takes for those people over there.
But it was
that
also
might be apocryphal, but he good? Was not he didn't like it. From what
am I wrong thinking that it was good?
No, it's good. I love Donkey Kong Country. Yeah. I played so much Donkey Kong Country. It started my donkey mania.
I also love that it was co-op.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played this game with my cousin and he was very mean and convinced me that only babies play Diddy Kong and convinced me to switch and play Donkey Kong instead. And then he started telling me how Diddy Kong was so much better and he tricked me into getting it. And it was a terrible time. He was very mean.
It's messed up.
But it's fine.
That's very messed up.
Basically, he had me like begging to play the character I didn't have at all times. It was a fun time.
It was a genius move.
Yeah.
This game came out really late in the Super NES cycle. So to do what they did graphically was basically the only way they could compete against like the PlayStation and the Sega Saturn, which nobody really cared about anyway. But I mean, they just took pictures of computer generated graphics and used those to animate it. And it made it look like a CG generated game. It's
pretty brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very
also,
cool.
It's just rules. Like I love Donkey Kong Country. The fact that if you guys haven't played Donkey Kong Country, I'd even go as far as to say it holds up. Like it really, really does. It's a fun platformer. And there's parts of it that are going to be off-putting. The graphics rule, but as a result, the like hitbox of like when you're supposed to jump or when you'll fall off an edge is like way less precise than we are used to in modern platformers. So like you're going to have to adjust to that. But like if you've never played it before, but it's so worth it. I think that's great.
Or if I may, just play Tropical Freeze, which is actually the best Donkey Kong game.
Tropical Freeze is
one of the best platformers on the Switch. Yeah. That game rules.
Why not both?
And it has new funky mode. Let's not forget about funky mode.
And
funky
we are
mode
also
is for babies.
Say that, Zach. Play games however you want to.
Nah, I know. Come on, you know that's true.
I know. I also wanted to mention that Natsume Championship Wrestling is also coming with this pack, and so is the Immortal for NES. And I also wanted to bring up that there was a special like classified information video by Nintendo, which included a bunch of cheats for Donkey Kong Country. And it's Sam actually pointed out that this is a callback to Nintendo Power Section, which had cheats. Yep. And it's really cool. And they're really helpful, awesome cheats, like starting with 50 lives and having a bonus practice area. We could play with all of the different animals that you can kind of, I don't know, summon.
Yeah.
In Donkey Kong Country.
That's pretty interesting. Do you think that they did that in lieu of the bonus modes like they did for Zelda and Metroid? You know, like Zelda, you could start with a bunch of rupees and the white sword. And, you know, like, you think that Nintendo put out this funny video as a way to be like, oh, and also you can play Donkey Kong, but here is a leg up.
It's the funky mode that we didn't even know they included.
And it feels more classic because it's
funky mode. Yeah.
It's very cool.
Man.
Yeah. Look forward to those games on July 15th with your Nintendo Switch Online subscription. And very quickly, I wanted to mention The World Ends With You. The animation is coming. And this is a DS game by Square Enix. You might recognize it. They made a cameo in some of the Kingdom Hearts games. It's coming in 2021. The anime will be a retelling of the original game with some expanded scenes, and I'm super excited about this because the game story is awesome, and I always thought it would make an incredible anime. So super stoked for that.
I have it's it also a really good somewhere game. Here in my collection unopened because I was like, oh, this game is speaking my language, and I bought it, and I just never played. So I might have the Switch version too somewhere.
Yeah, I know it's better on the DS.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but still good on the Switch, but better on the DS.
Sitting right over there. Or I got my backups behind me, so I'm good.
It's such a funny thing to bring back as an animated show because it's got, like you said, the story is good and the aesthetic is wonderful, but like it's just like I don't feel like there's a ton of people like it's not a game that like elicits like massive crowd support, I guess is the way I'm trying to say it. Like even though it's well loved, it's just like it's not one I would think that they'd like try to bank on the name of, I guess is the right way to put it, which is sort of funny to me.
Could you fill me in on the story? Is it some teens fighting at a mall? Is that what the...
What?
Basically, yeah.
No. Okay. What? God, how do I explain it without spoiling anything? I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to tell you about the story without spoiling it.
But some teens having a fight over fashion.
You'll have to watch and find out.
It's set in modern Shibuya, and there are fantasy supernatural shenanigans going on.
Cool. Okay. Well,
and you got to complete challenges in order to not die.
All right.
There. No spoilers. There you go.
Break it out of the cellophane wrapper.
Also, the different fashion you wear affects your steps.
Okay, so it is teen shopping RPG. Okay.
You also got that too, yeah.
Okay,
it's
cool.
It's really cool. I really enjoy it a lot.
I'm into it.
And lastly, I just wanted to bring this up as well. We got some reports that some voice actors had finished recording their lines for Breath of the Wild 2, but there is an update on that. It appears our initial report about the work on the Spanish voice acting for Breath of the Wild 2 missed some nuance about the language used in the original interview. While some had taken Navarro and Alfonso's words to mean that they have either started or finished their work on the game, they do not confirm that fact during the interview. Indeed, the tone of the interview implies that they may even have been joking about their work on the sequel. As such, the interview can't be taken as guidance on the status of the voiceover work, nor as guidance on how far through the development the game may be.
Hmm.
Translations are tricky in some. So, yeah, unfortunately, Breath of the Wild 2 isn't actually close to being finished, as everyone assumed based on that interview.
I saw a tweet that said something along the lines of, like, the guy just finished going...
Yeah, there you go.
Those are called efforts.
They're called what?
I believe they're called efforts when you're recording like those kind of sound effects.
Really?
When you're in the VO booth. I think they're called recording efforts when you do like a yeah.
That was good. That was really good, actually.
Thank great
you.
Effort.
I've been recording some efforts recently, as you can see.
This funny thing about this is like we're basically just back to where we were, which is like we don't know what Nintendo's doing. Right?
It's like an evergreen statement, yeah.
Yeah. But like I mean they could be, you know, again, I think it is still completely realistic to think that maybe, and I do think this is less likely now with COVID and that stuff, but like I think possibly this game is coming out this holiday and we just haven't been told about it yet. I would be willing to bet that's no longer the case. I'm not quite as confident in that as I was just because of the way this year has been, but like it could be that it could be 2 years away. We literally don't know. We just got to wait for whatever their what would have been E3 Direct will be.
Yeah, literally no clue, but I hope that E3 Direct comes soon. So we just talked about some news, including the announcement date for Panzer Paladin, some Nintendo Switch Online games announced, including Donkey Kong Country, The World Ends With You animation, and some Breath of the Wild 2 news. But let's move on to some games out this week, including Superliminal, out on the 7th for $20. Tom, you said this is a first-person puzzle game that messes with perspective in wild and unique ways.
So we nominated this game for one of our in our list of best puzzle games of 2019. And it's one I totally, totally recommend if you're a fan of anything like Portal or, what is the name of that game? Now I'm totally blanking.
I know exactly what game you're talking about, and I can't remember the name. That's a great game.
Antichamber. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Antichamber. Talos Principle, any of those first person puzzle games, it's one like that. But the cool thing about this one is, like, if you pick up a mug on a table, and then like move it so that it looks like perspective wise, it's far away and actually very large, and then let go, the mug will be that large in the room. So like there's all these weird sort of perspective messing ideas in this game and it's just really, really, it's a very unique game. I don't think you'll have played a puzzle game like it if you're into other puzzle games like that.
Cool. And speaking of puzzle games, we got Catherine Full Body out this week, out on the 7th for $50. And it is an expanded version of the original Catherine, which came out for the 360 and PS3.
Years ago.
I think it was like 2011.
Yeah, 2011. Yes, you are correct. 2011. And It is an expanded version of Catherine. I actually previewed this last year and saw it, some of it at E3. I got some E3 swag that I'm excited about. Let's see if I can fit these over my headphones. Kind of. There we go. I got some.
Nice.
Those look nice. Good work.
No, I give up. It's not going to work. But it's, as Tom describes it, it's basically a Persona-style narrative game, but instead of RPG combat, you are solving block-pulling puzzles to climb a tower. The story is bonkers and unique, and it's kind of, I don't even know if I can say it, but there's dating involved and romance, and I hate the main character, Vincent. He is trash, but it is a very, very good game and a fun story, and the gameplay is awesome.
It's also part of the point, right?
Yeah, and it's also very, like, the story itself is like a very mature story, I think, compared to Persona, which is obviously like more like high fantasy and you know, stuff like that. Like, this game is about cheating, basically. Like, it's about a cheater. Like,
it's about cheating and adults growing up and settling down or not.
But also it's about block puzzles.
And it does explore a lot of those questions, and it actually has you answering questions about morality throughout the game, and there's kind of a twist. There's plenty of twists, and it kind of, I don't know, it had me, when I first played it in college, it had me think a lot about those themes that it represented in the game.
How much did you say this was on Switch?
$50. It did come out for, this version of the game came out in the PS4 and Xbox One, I think earlier this year or last year.
Last year, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, you are correct. And Mitchell Saltzman reviewed it. He gave it an 8.8 and says, Catherine is a timeless classic and full-bodied, does a great job at adding meaningful new content and plenty of small tweaks that breathe fresh life into it. It's the perfect entry point for those who missed the 2011 original. There we go. There's the year that came out. But yeah, they introduced a whole new Catherine. There were once two Catherines and now there are three. And it adds some extra story, and they did a few tweaks to kind of address some fan complaints from the first one.
$50 for a whole new Catherine.
I know, whole new Catherine. That's $50. But yeah, I do highly recommend that. Also coming out this week is Crosscode, out on the 9th for $20. And Tom, what do you have to say about this one?
I have to say about Crosscode is play it. Just like, man, this game, it's kind of like a Mana series style, where it's like sort of isometric-y top-down action combat game. This is an RPG that is deceptively large. Like, it could take you upwards of 80 hours to beat.
Whoa.
If you want to do all the side stuff. It can be much shorter than that if you're just like mainlining it. But it's like, it's this indie RPG that I think flew under a ton of people's radars when it first came out in, I think it was 2018.
Yeah,
the Switch,
right.
Switchport has been like really like anticipated, I guess is the right word, because it wasn't even supposed to ever be able to come to Switch, because the way they originally coded the game was like not portable, basically. So the developers had to do a ton of work to get it onto Switch. And yeah, Crosscode is just like, this is an extraordinarily easy recommendation from me, especially at $20. It's a steal for this game. So I'd absolutely recommend it to people, or at least into RPGs like this, look at it, check it out, because it is worth your attention.
I talked about this game a few weeks ago on the show. I'd describe it as like 16 plus bit, right? Ooh, where it's right. Like, it's like a Super NES style game, but like the pixel art is just absolutely insane. It just looks gorgeous. I've been watching this one for a long time and been waiting for it to come out on the Switch specifically so I can play it there. So I'm pretty stoked to get my little hooks in it.
Yeah, cool. I'm looking at this right now, and
these ones.
I'm getting my hooks sharpened up.
Yeah, and it's everything too. The story is cool.
Everyone, get your hooks ready.
The music is great. The combat is great. Like, it's just a cool game. It's a very, very good game.
For those of you who are listening, Seth's eyes, like, face lit up when Tom was describing this game.
Yeah, and then I looked at the pictures and stuff, and I was like, this is my game. Like, specifically,
Seth, let's see those hooks.
See, the hooks are out, baby. Doing one of these, get some sparks, sharpen them up, get that
edge. I like it.
Sinking them.
You gotta come watch the video to see these hooks that they're pulling out just for this game.
For people at home, we're curling our fingers to simulate hooks.
They're pretending to be velociraptors.
Clever girl.
Also coming out this week is Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2. We briefly mentioned this previously. Zach is stoked. Are you going to play this?
Hell yeah. Are you kidding? The first Bloodstained was so good. So Ritual of the Night is the big boy version of Bloodstained, the Igarashi-led one. But I believe the first one was called Curse of the Moon.
Yes.
Bloodstained Curse of the Moon. And that is an 8-bit NES style, 8-bit plus, like in the same way that we were talking about CrossCode, where it is like an NES style Castlevania game. You can switch between four characters. This game has new characters to play as, but man, that first game as a precursor to Ritual of the Night was like one of my favorite games of 2018. Ritual of the Night was on nearly the top of my list last year. So, you know, these games are right up my alley. And this game, is this also Inti Creates? I believe it is.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Sweet. Those guys are great.
Yeah, they do great stuff.
And this one is out on the 10th and it's only $15. So if you like Metroidvanias or Castlevania-ish likes,
Castlevania.
Yeah, it's more NES Castlevania than I feel like it's like Metroidvania. But the cool thing about the last one, about Circle of the Moon, or I'm sorry, Curse of the Moon, was you had to switch characters to get through different environments and stuff. You know, like some characters had different abilities, so you had to switch on the fly between these characters. But then they all shared sort of one cohesive health bar, so like all four characters had to die before you got a game over. So yeah, such a cool game. Can't wait for this next one.
That's a really cool, I don't know, like, I don't want to call it a gimmick, just
what are you, a gameplay mechanic.
Gameplay mechanic. There you go. Thanks, Seth. I don't know
what's wrong with my brain
today, but it's fine. I'm ready. Also coming out.
New t-shirt design.
This is going to be our new thing. Get back. No. Also coming out this week is Deadly Premonition 2, A Blessing in Disguise, out on the 10th for $50. It is a sequel to the cult classic detective game, but I have some news. Our reviewer Tristan, I've never
Ogilvie.
Said his name. Out.
Tristan Ogilvie.
Thanks. Yeah. I think you helped me out with that one last time too. Ogilvie. Someday I will remember how to pronounce your last name. I'm so sorry, Tristan. But he gave it a 5 out of 10.
Oof.
And this is what he has to say: Deadly Premonition 2 isn't good, nor is it so bad that it's good like its predecessor. It's something much, much worse. It's mediocre, and that's too bad. I'm certainly grateful for the chance to spend some more time with the eccentric and ever enthusiastic Francis York Morgan, because he remains one of the funniest and most unique lead characters in all of gaming. But I found myself less tolerant of Deadly Premonition 2's technical issues and half-baked combat this time around, and its central mystery is ridiculous without ever going far enough off the rails to be truly surprising or memorable. Well, that's disappointing.
Yeah, I haven't had an opportunity to play this game. You know, the first one is a cult classic, but I did look at Tristan's review, and man, that frame rate is something else, man. Especially for a 2020 game, it doesn't look great. And like, granted, I think IGN gave the original a 2 or a 3, and that game is still one of the most beloved, you know, one of the most beloved cult games I think of all time. So this one still has the potential to do that, but like as a nuts and bolts game, you know, it's a bummer to hear that it's only a 5 out of 10.
Yeah. I saw Jim Sterling actually put it really well. Huh?
There we go. Yeah, I'm okay.
Oh, no, no, no. I saw Jim Sterling put it really well, where he basically was saying like, there are things about the way Swery makes games that are like very intentionally janky, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is his intentional design style in a lot of cases, but stuff like frame rate is like just wrong. Like that's not part of that, right? Like you can appreciate parts of Deadly Premonition that are like stupid or like jank as like this sort of hokey thing, and that's fine, that's great. But like if the game doesn't run well, that's not really like a style, that's just sort of a failing of the performance of the game, right?
Yeah. So disappointment. I'm sure we'll talk about it more once more of us have played it, because even though it's got bad reviews, I assume some of us might still check it out. We'll see. I was hoping maybe Brian would check it out, but we'll get back to it.
I'm sure Brian is playing it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm positive.
So we just talked about games out this week, including Superliminal, Catherine Full Body, CrossCode, and Deadly Premonition 2, A Blessing in Disguise. Now, I want to move on, but do any of you have a game you're playing that you really want to talk about?
I'd like to talk about Paper Mario, the Origami.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Cool. So then let's move on to question block, where we answer our audience members' questions. And this first question is from Sony Vaughn, or Sunny Vaughn, one of those two. And he says, at what age do you think it's appropriate to introduce kids to proper video games, not just tablet teddy bear games? And which games would you start with? I'm thinking Super Mario Bros. Yes, the first one, and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe with all the assists on for my 2-year-old daughter.
2-year-old's probably a little too young, not because I think it's going to like rot her precious little brain or anything, but I think like she just won't really comprehend it, and it might not be fun or and it might end up being frustrating. I would say maybe 3 or 4. When my son, my oldest son, who is 16 now, when he was 4,
old enough to drive a Mario Kart.
He's old enough to drive a Mario Kart. But he's not old enough to throw a banana peel. It's no. Weird laws that we have.
That's right. Can't throw a banana. Can't throw a banana peel until you're 21, kids.
That's exactly correct. You can go to the service, fight for your country, but you can't throw banana peels. Where was I saying? Oh yeah, when he was 4, he and I played Lego Star Wars 2 together, and I think that was like the perfect game because it was a co-op game, and he was more interested in just making R2. Fall off cliffs and scream because he goes every time over and over again, and he just like had the most fun with that. So I would say Super Mario Brothers also, or any of those classic games, are great for kids to play because they were so simple for the most part that anybody can pick them up and play them. And then bonus, your little sweet daughter will grow up with an amazing appreciation of classic gaming like I've instilled in my children. Mm-hmm. I guess Mario Kart with all the assists on for 2-year-old will be fine because it just basically plays itself. But
you know,
yeah.
Some of my earliest memories, I must have been 2 or 3, was sitting on the floor in a living room with my dad and watching either Gilligan's Island or playing Super Mario World on the nice. Super Nintendo. And that was my first game, and I still remember it. It's kind of blurry. I mean, I was super young, but I completely agree, Seth. I think Mario games are a perfect introduction or any sort of platformers because, I mean, you go right and you jump over things. The mechanics are simple enough for even 2 and 3-year-olds to kind of get the hang of, as long as they play it a couple times with you by their side to help guide them.
Yeah, I also the very first video game that I remember playing seriously was Super Mario Brothers 3. And I was probably 5 or 6 by the time I was playing that. And, you know, those games do a really nice job of introducing like simple mechanics at first and then gradually building on the stuff that you understand. Now, I don't have any children myself, but when I do, my plan is to start with the classics. So I'll be having them play Dark Souls Remastered on the Nintendo Switch. Just get them right in there and teach them what's what.
Perfect. Great advice. Tom, did you want to expand on games great for kids?
No, I feel like a baby. I don't want to really talk about what I think babies should play. That
Tom's
is
Tom's out here talking babies having babies, man. Watch out.
Oh, man. So this next question is from Evan Beatuff, and they ask, which genre is lacking the most on the Switch?
That's a great question, because there are some that are like just lacking on consoles in general, like RTS games, right? Like that's coming up a little bit more on the Switch now, but like for me, it would probably just be like more first person stuff. Like I don't necessarily know what like specifically a genre in that, because there are good shooters, right? Like there's
Wolfenstein, Doom, Overwatch.
Yeah, there are good shooters in first person there. It's just like I don't think of a lot of like, I don't know. I think like bigger first person adventure-y games, I think are maybe missing to a certain extent, but maybe I'm just not thinking about them right now.
You know, it would be a great first person adventure-y game. Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah. That's
or the Metroid genre Prime trilogy.
Metroid Prime games. Metroid Prime. That's the genre.
Yeah.
Someday.
I think that this is not maybe my favorite genre, but if I could speak for our friend Per Schneider, racing games. I feel like we have a general lack of racing games. There are a few interesting sims and a few interesting kart racers, but for the most part, I think like racing games are sorely missing on the Switch. Oh, we did just get Burnout Paradise. You know, it is subject to the Switch tax at the moment, but hopefully that'll come down eventually, because that's a really great arcade racer. But yeah, I feel like there could be more, you know, like hardcore racing games on the Switch.
Until we get analog triggers, man, there's not really.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
It's a tough, tough genre to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's really not a lot of fighting games on the, the Nintendo Switch.
I mean, what do you need more fighting games for when you have Smash? I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
Sure. I'm not. I always wanted to be a fighting game guy, but I'm so bad at them. So I'm not really advocating very well for it. But.
And there are exceptions to all those, right? Like Zach brought up Switch shooter. There is Mario Kart or Mortal Kombat 11, but like, yeah.
Well, there's also the Street Fighter collection on Switch, which is a phenomenal,
very
value.
Good,
and really, really good. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think you guys all spoke my mind as well, so we'll leave it at that. It needs more racing games and some more fighting games, but as Tom mentioned, kind of need analog triggers for the racing games. So we'll wait and see for that. Maybe we'll get a new controller.
Joy-Con 2.
Probably not. Joy-Con 2. Pro Controller 2.
No drift.
Didn't we already have a Pro Controller for the Wii U, though? Anyway, it's fine. Whatever. This next question is from David Opinko, and he asks, what's your favorite game on Switch that you feel is underrated? For me, it's Dragon Quest Builders 2. It's a great game that, even when it came out, I hardly heard anyone talking about. You know, and I have to agree with him. Dragon Quest Builders 2 was actually really fun, and it got its hooks in me, so I guess that doesn't work. But I had a lot of fun with it when I had time to play it when it first came out, and I keep meaning to revisit it. What about you guys? What are some of your favorite games that you think are severely underrated?
So many. This question hurts my brain because so many things come out on Switch now that like there are so many good games that just kind of fall under the radar sometimes. So like I'll start with this. If you haven't played Return of the Obra Dinn yet, play Return of the Obra Dinn.
That's a good one.
That's what I was gonna say, Tom.
Sorry.
Damn, that's all right.
Yeah, that one jumps out to me as like, man, that game is good and flew under so many people's radar because of, I think, honestly, the way it looks. Like it is a hard game to sell and a hard game to look at, especially in screenshots when it's not moving. So like
hard game to look at.
It is. It's very like Sam Claiborne said that he had to stop playing Obra Dinn because it was giving him a headache. Like I sympathize with, right? I'm not throwing shade at that. It's one bit. It's literally one bit. So yeah. But play Obra Dinn, man.
Okay, another Switch game that I feel like is underrated that we didn't talk about a ton. Well, Brian talked about it a little bit, but I feel like it's not been brought up a lot since is Minute. Minute is a very cool take on you know, traditional Zelda game, where you only have a minute to play and you keep, you know, repeating the same things. It's kind of, it's a little bit roguelike. It's a little bit Zelda. Like it's a very, very cool concept. And it's just kind of a really funny game. Once you get into the whole conceit of it, I like that game a lot.
I also I've already brought this up many times before, but Room Factory 4 Special is very good on the Switch. I know it was originally a 3DS game, but I just want to throw it out there again. Seth, what about you?
I think the Switch version of Cave Story is super, super good. It's basically the definitive version of Cave Story. And if you haven't played Cave Story, do yourself a favor. Go grab it on Switch if you can find it, because it's a wonderful, delightful game. And it has some incredible music. And you can change the soundtracks around on the Switch version to whichever one you like the best.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Cave Story is such a good game.
It's such a good game. That game's like extremely old now, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's worth it if you haven't picked it up yet.
I'd go so far as to call it a classic at this point. Like honestly, like that. Yeah, that game is killer. I thought of another one as well. Nine Parchments. Did anybody play Nine Parchments?
No.
I played a while back. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you and I played a little bit at the office. But Nine Parchments is a very cool sort of. It's like a co-op Diablo kind of game where you're in an isometric. Oh. I think it's the team behind Torchlight. Tom, do you remember if that's true?
It's some connection there. It's a similar game. I don't remember exactly though.
It's an isometric kind of hack and slash, but you can do really cool stuff. Like one person can shoot, you know, lightning beams, and the other person can reflect it onto enemies. Like you do like a lot of team ups and stuff. It's a really cool sort of dungeon crawler, like a Diablo, but with a twist. Really fun to play in co-op.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question, David. And our last question for this week is from James Gold, and they ask, last week, Brian mentioned long games as being a barrier to replayability. I'm in the same boat. Hollow Knight is one of my favorite games of recent years, but I haven't gone back to it as much as the Metroid franchise due to length. What are your favorite games around 12 hours or less to revisit? And before we start this question, Tom, how long is Hollow Knight?
The first time it took me to beat it took me 30 hours, and then I spent another 6 hours hitting 100%. And since then, they've added 4 or 5 DLCs that I think have extended the length of the game by at least 10. If you want 100% that game, it's probably about 40 to 50 hours. If you wanted to just beat it, like just playing it, not worrying about like getting to one of the not true endings, if you want to get technical about it, is probably like 15, maybe. So it can be, but then you're missing so much of the meat of the game. But yeah, it's a long game. All in, it's a long game.
I don't want to derail the conversation, but because I just saw a Wall Street Journal headline that says that Japanese theme parks have banned screaming on roller coasters because it spreads the coronavirus and have asked their participants to please scream inside your heart.
It's 2020. Screaming inside your heart.
Scream inside your heart. 12 hour games.
I would throw my hat in. One of the games I like replaying that doesn't take long to like technically beat is Celeste. Man, I love that game. It's got a lot of built-in things of, you know, timing yourself and the golden strawberries that show up if you beat all the B-sides too. It's like there's a lot to do in that game, but it's one of those ones that you can really lightly just dip back into and just like play the chapters that you like.
Tom, you reviewed that game. What score did you give that game?
I don't remember, actually. It was a while ago.
Okay, that's fair.
I gave it a 10.
He gave it a 10. That's a very good game. Celeste is a very good recommendation.
Go for it, Zach.
Brian said it last week, but he mentioned Resident Evil 4. But I think there's a lot of Resident Evil games on the Switch that are about that same length. That are totally worthwhile. And specifically the original Resident Evil, I feel like you can blow through in about the same amount of time and maybe even shorter than that. And
yeah, if you beat it in 3 hours, you get to replay it with the missile launcher with infinite ammo.
That's right. Yeah, I feel like that's probably something that those games I go back to like pretty frequently. So
I would say all of the like all the classic NES games. Like I play Mega Man 2 through like at least once a year. I go through DuckTales like once a year, because DuckTales is also one of my favorite games. You could play the original Legend of Zelda in under 12 hours. Like you could just sit down and just make a day of it. I mean, why not? What are you going to do? Otherwise, you're not going to the beach. Go play the Legend of Zelda, the original one. It's on Nintendo Switch Online anyway. It's $20 a
year. That's true.
Yeah.
The classics. I am drawing a blank on favorite games that are not long as heck. Like a lot of my favorite games are just really beefy, and I guess I really liked the complete first season of The Walking Dead by Telltale. I think that is right around 12 hours, if I'm remembering correctly. And I think a lot of the Telltale, if you play an entire season, and also Life is Strange was also kind of on the short end. But these are all story based games, so I don't know how often you would want to go back and replay them, because the whole drawing point to them is the story. So unless it's been many years, I don't know if you'd want to go back and replay it again, even though there are choices that you can make. But I don't know. I usually don't go back and replay story games. I just kind of like look up what I missed out on online. So
honestly, I don't replay a lot of games. Probably game I've replayed the most in recent years, weirdly, is Sayonara Wild Hearts, because that game is like 2 hours long and just is an absolute jam. So it's just like really fun to replay that one.
So good.
Yeah,
I don't know. As a kid, I replayed games all the time, because as a kid, I couldn't buy my own games, so I kind of was stuck with a handful that I had. So if I got bored, I'd restart a game. Like I remember, I started a new game in like Pokemon Red or Blue just for fun, and then I didn't think about it and saved, and I was just like, oh well, I just saved over my save. That's fine. I guess I'll just do this again. But as a kid, it was like I had the time. So,
right. I used to do that with a lot of like Square RPGs on the PlayStation 1, where I just play them like over and over and over again.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So when you restart your save, it's fine. But if someone else erases your save, it's
a bummer.
It's a super big bummer. Don't do that.
Yeah.
But that is about all the time we have left for Nintendo Voice Chat. Thank you so much for listening and or watching. And remember, you can catch NVC every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time on your favorite podcasting platform. And remember, Nintendo Voice Chat is the only place you can
scream inside your heart.
You'll get the thing.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.